Hey y'all, it's Stephanie from Root to Seed. In this episode, you'll hear my interview with Cindy Holt of Little Rhody Beekeeping and her dog Klaus. This interview provides a lot of information about beekeeping, the rewards, and its punishments. First, though, I'd like to share our news. Since our last episode, we have announced the Spring Tea Blend, a simple blend of chamomile and peppermint. And we also created an all-natural organic formula for houseplants called the Bye Bye Bug Potion. Both of these items can be found in the shop at www.roottoseed.com. Now, talk about an emotional roller coaster. The chicks have arrived. They got here early Wednesday morning. They came in the mail. I wasn't a fan of doing it this way, but I had my reasons. I had ordered 3 and got 4. One quickly died, likely from the stress of being mailed. The 3 remaining were named Gail, Rita, and Betsy. Betsy immediately was the smallest and frailest, and Gail was the largest and most assertive. In most circumstances, this is exactly what's supposed to happen behaviorally, but about 12 hours later, Betsy was dead. Likely kept from warmth and perhaps food or water, she was found far from the heating area. So now there are 2, and I'll never be ordering chicks via the mail again, so I've learned my lesson about that. But soon, once Gail and Rita are a little bit more grown up and it's a little bit warmer outside, they can go join Penelope and Dolores outside, and then they can have a nice, happy family. One more positive note is that Nola and Lucia are very interested in checking out the chicks, and they perk up when they hear them chirping. It'll be interesting to see where these relationships go. I'll be back in just a few seconds to tell you about Cindy Holt. Okay, Cindy Holt is an Eastern Apicultural Society certified master beekeeper and the current director of that society for Rhode Island. She's also the owner and operator of Little Rhody Beekeeping, which provides a variety of honeybee and pollinator related services and apiatrix and apiaries for her honey and hive products. Cindy is the former newsletter editor for the Rhode Island Beekeeping Association and manager of the Rhode Island Beekeeping Association apiary, which is part of the Bee Informed Partnership Centennial Apiary Program. A writer and a dabbler in herbalism, she's also made her personal mission to get as many people as possible to care about insects and arachnids as much as she does. For our interview, we met at her home in Providence and was joined by her dog, Klaus. We sat outside and abided by all necessary safety precautions. Due to being outside, there will be some background noise in the recording. I'll return in just a few seconds with the uninterrupted interview. Okay, so why don't you just explain a little about Rhody beekeeping?
Okay, so Little Rhody Beekeeping. I started in 2018, and there's a variety of things I do. I provide hive services for people who want honeybees in their yard, but are unable to make the commitment to care for them properly. So they hire me to do that for them. And if the hive makes honey, I give them honey. I look after the bees year round. I also provide mentorship for people who are keeping bees and they need some extra help. My difference between what I do and the traditional mentorship, which is usually clubs will hook a new beekeeper up with somebody more experienced to answer questions and help them through stuff, is, I'm scheduled. I show up, when needed, things like that. Klaus, back off. I also sell honey. I sell hive products. Well, I should say that I will be selling hive products because I'm waiting for my retail permit in the state of Rhode Island. So be nice to me, state of Rhode Island. I'm following the law. And so I will be selling hive products such as candles and salves, things like that. I also do some pollinator monitoring for a corporation in Rhode Island, and I submit samples of specimens of native bees to URI for their bee catalog. I a whole bunch of, and you know, I could probably pick up something different this year. It's a very flexible sort of business. A little bit of everything.
It does sound like a little bit of everything and anything that you could possibly want from a beekeeping mentor.
Yeah.
I think of the person when you see, you know, in television shows and pictures of those people that are just physically covered in bees.
Oh, yes.
And it makes me wonder, what are some of the common misconceptions that people have that you're able to kind of talk them out of to allow them to be comfortable with keeping bees?
Well, first off, I tell a lot of people, don't do it.
Don't dress in bees?
No, don't keep bees.
Oh.
I love bees. I can't imagine not keeping bees now that I've been doing it for so long. But it's really not for everybody. Bees are... It's a big time commitment. There's a lot of work. I've often find people who... Even before they start keeping bees, they're saying, like, I'll start a hive, but then I have to travel for work, I have to do this, that, and the other thing. It's a time commitment, there's a work commitment. You will get stung. Bees, at certain times of year, they're not friendly. They're not like the dog that's giving you love right now, or the, chickens or anything like that. They will sting you for a stranger if they feel like it, if you make a wrong move. You have to learn how to handle bees, and it's also not just to protect yourself, but to protect your neighbors, because your bees will affect your neighbors. It's very difficult, and I'm not saying that people should not do it, but it's harder than people think. And I see a lot of people who have been doing this, who have been trying to keep bees alive for years and not being able to do it, and it can be very discouraging. So, a lot of times I'll say, support your local beekeeper and get local honey, things like plant flowers, but for the honeybees are kind of picky, but plant flowers for the native bees, learn about native bees, provide habitat for them and just enjoy watching them, and that's very rewarding as well, so.
That's some good advice for people that can help, but not necessarily.
You're not going to save the earth by keeping bees. Bees are livestock. I'm sure that somebody might have something to say about this, but keeping honeybees in order to quote unquote save the bees is the same as keeping chickens to save the birds.
Gotcha.
And they don't really know, you know, the whole idea of saving and all that, that's a whole another ball game, but I don't really like that whole save the bees thing.
Makes sense. And it does make sense in thinking about it as a livestock as well.
Yeah.
Because we do have chickens, and so that obviously is a livestock, but we aren't trying to save any chickens.
Yeah.
we are using those chickens for the circle of life in our garden, but also to provide eggs and that sort of thing. And if we were to have bees, I would imagine it would be the same sort of thing, although we do not, because we are very close to our neighbors and don't think they would enjoy that.
Neighbors are saints. I love my neighbors. They get free honey.
Oh, great.
I
well, sometimes that works. Yep, my neighbors get free eggs.
Yep.
So when my chickens get loud, it's okay. So I wonder what kind of space is needed if you did decide to do it?
I have a couple hives of bees right here in my little alleyway. There's a pretty high fence in between my neighbors and I, so the bee's flight path is directed upwards. State law, I think, is you have to, I can't quote the law, but you have to have it be hives a certain amount of feet away from property lines. And I would say you'd want like a 10 to 12 feet clearance between beehives, entrances of beehives, and human pathways, animal pathways. I also keep pots of plants and stuff to block the bees from people. So you want the beehive to be undisturbed, and you want flight paths to not
intercede
with people.
Or
You can keep them in a very small place, but space. But you also have to keep in mind is you have to be also aware of like the mood of the hive, the weather, proper handling. A mishandled beehive can be potentially dangerous. And so, I'll probably say to a lot of questions like that, it depends. You could keep bees in a very small place, provided you have ways to block the, direct the flight paths upwards, and it's somebody who's experienced in handling bees, where you don't even know they've been in the beehive. You could keep bees anywhere.
Gotcha.
It all depends on the situation.
So it's a case by case.
Yeah, everything's case by case.
And aside from the beehives, is there any other equipment someone would need on hand?
You need protective equipment. You need a veil at the very least. Depending on your comfort level, they have bee suits. I wear a whole bee suit a lot. It's all not just for bees, but also for ticks. Some people wear heavy leather gloves. I wear nitrile gloves or I go barehanded. You need a hive tool, which is basically like a pry bar to pull the frames out. Bees glue everything together with this sticky plant resin mix of plant resin and wax called propolis. So you have to unstick everything, depending on the types of bees too. You will need a smoker. Smoke covers bees communicate through smell, so you want to cover up alarm pheromones, things like that. You also want to direct bees in a certain direction. You can use little puffs of smoke. An extractor is always good, because there are times when you have to, a honey extractor is important even for somebody who just has a few hives, because there are times when there is a heavy nectar flow on and bees start running out of room to store all the honey, and if you don't have proper honeycomb to put that honey in, they're going to fill up their brood nest, and that can create its own problem. So you want an extractor, you want a smoker, you want hive tools, you want a couple because I always lose mine, you want protective equipment, you need extra boxes, you always need like an extra set hive set. It gets to where you half your house is taken up with the equipment.
All right, so a lot of things are needed.
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's not a cheap hobby.
It's also good to know. And are those things part of what you would provide if you were setting up the hive, or are people expected to kind of get that stuff on their own?
So if I'm setting up the hive, that would be, I have several different levels of service. I have a whole hive service, which is one flat rate, and I give you everything, bees, equipment, replace equipment, it's one flat fee. I have the monthly package, which I don't do as much anymore, except for people who, I have a few clients who are former beekeepers, couldn't make the commitment, but they want somebody to take care of the bees. They have all that, but everybody buys the equipment or they purchase it from me, which I sell at cost. I get it from local providers, local businesses, and that would be a part of the hive service package. Is you have to pay for everything separate. I bill it, or you order it, and it's there waiting for me. It's case by case basis.
And what about, one of the questions that we got is about first bee types, which I know you had already talked about native bees versus honeybees, and what sort of a family of bees looks like, and if it is even called a family.
The term they use right now is a colony. Okay. Colony of bees. And it consists of a queen. And she's the one reproductive female. You all know. The queen is the only reproductive female. Sometimes there's two queens. That's a whole other story. But she's the mother of everybody in the hive. And then it's the worker bees. They're all female. And they form a whole bunch of different tasks. And then there's drones, which are the males, and they are only around in the spring, summer, early fall months. And then they either die when they mate with a queen bee, or they're kicked out at the end of the season.
So does the queen change every year?
Sometimes. So when a colony is getting too big and the hive gets too congested, they do this if they they swarm. And the old queen, and I'm going to just simply, this is a very, very basic, there's all the other different things that gets complicated, but in the spring, the hive itself will reproduce on a colony, superorganism level, and the old queen and, let's just say, half your hive leaves to find a new home, and then back at the hive makes another queen, and she goes out and mates, and then that starts another colony.
Oh.
That can happen yearly. It can happen several times a year. There's things you can do that it doesn't happen. There's a whole bunch. There's a million and one different little techniques that beekeepers use to prevent that, because when those bees leave, you lose several weeks during your main nectar flow where the hive is getting its all of its affairs in order. So the population will take a little dip and you have fewer bees going out and gathering the nectar to make the honey that you want to jar and blah, blah, blah. So half your bees are gone, your really good queen's gone, and they take a bunch of your honey too. So we do a lot of stuff to prevent that from happening, starting with adding plenty of room so that they don't feel too congested. But we also make splits where we split the hive into two hives, take the old queen, kind of try to trick the bees into thinking that they swarmed. There's a whole bunch of different features.
Once a hive is set up, how is it that you can tell if the bees are adjusting well, and or can you actually tell if they're happy?
Well, once you set the hive up, you perform inspections and you make sure that the brood nest is free from disease, the queen is laying in a nice even pattern, and the queen is there, and the bees are doing everything they are supposed to do. You pretty much can tell that through practice. You learn how to read the frames and you read the behavior. Sometimes you can just tell that a hive is unhappy for whatever reason because you walk outside and the bees start going after you, and that's not a good sign. Something's going on. So queen doing what she's supposed to do, bees doing what they're supposed to do, hive is free from disease. You do that through regular inspections. About once a week during swarm season, which is from, I'll probably start all of my inspections once temperatures get up to like the low 60s, and it'll be once a week through mid-June, and then I'll go back to every 2 weeks after that until the end of the season.
It's a lot of work.
Okay,
how many bees do you need to start with, and do they come from the wild or do they come from an established colony that you split?
So around here, so you can get bees from packages. A package of bees is it's like a little crate of bees, a little cage full of bees, and a queen in her own little cage. And those usually start showing up in early April. You want to put in your orders through bee suppliers now. If not, they might have already like sold out by now. And people will drive down to Georgia, or I can't remember where the guy that I get stuff from. I don't buy packages. I'm just going to stress that as well. But they go out to a distribution center. They load up their truck full of packages, and then the beekeepers go to whatever the meetup place is and get their packages of bees. There's people who sell nucleus colonies. A nucleus colony is a little tiny beehive in a box with like five frames of bees and a laying queen. Those usually come out from mid-May on. It depends on the weather. Bad weather can delay packages as well. If there's bad weather in California, where some packages come from, or Georgia and the South, where other packages come from, that can delay shipment of bees. nucleus colonies as well. And you can get nucleus colonies. Like I sometimes sell little nucleus colonies of bees. And that's pretty, or you can catch a swarm.
Catch a swarm?
Yep, you catch a swarm.
Or from like something that's like someone breaks down a wall in their house and there's a swarm in
that,
there?
No, that's actually an established hive. That would be a rescue. Those can get complicated. I don't do those. I know people who do. A swarm is, like I said earlier, when the colony reproduces with the old queen leaves. So what happens is the bees leave the hive and they usually stop somewhere in the vicinity of the original mother hive. And they hang from a branch, they hang from the umbrella of a hot dog cart, they will go in some area, and the bees all hang out and they decide where they're going to go live. And scout bees go and try to find a place and then convince all the other bees that their place is the best place. And there's this whole little discussion that happens. Mm-hmm. And they dance to tell everybody where the best new home is.
Do they ever choose the old home?
No, they don't go back unless the queen got left behind. But they, once a hive swarms, they want. And you can knock those bees into a box and put them in a hive. It's usually best not to put them right back where you caught them.
Sure.
I'll put them in a different yard. I have a bunch of bee yards. So you can catch the bees, and those are nice. Those are free bees. I get end of April, I start getting calls, and the swarms don't always stay very long, so you have to be prepared to just drop everything and go pick up the bees. I don't always, but there's a whole community of beekeepers, and everybody gets the calls. One person can't make it, they call somebody else, and somebody inevitably will go and pick up the bees. So that's a nice way, and swarms are usually quite docile, so they're easy to just knock in the box. They're usually quite docile. I always get stung when I'm collecting swarms. So.
It seems like it would be unavoidable.
Yeah.
Especially when they are engaged in conversation.
And you get like a bunch of bees, like you shake the branch and they fall on you, you're going to get stung.
So on that same topic, how is it that you aren't afraid to do that? Like, how is it that you've conditioned yourself to calmly be able to do something like that?
I wear a bee suit. It's funny because sometimes I'm fine with just a veil, and sometimes I'm not up for it and I'll wear a full suit. It's funny because since the pandemic started, I've been like, my nerves have been completely shot. So I've just suited up and worn gloves, and I'll get stung inevitably, but it's practice. You have to move slowly. It's like a meditation. You have to breathe. You actually have to breathe carefully because bees don't like your breath either. So if you breathe too hard on the bees, they get mad.
And I would imagine it's probably good to not be like highly perfumed.
No perfumes. I wear like essential oils mixed in like with like oil and stuff. But I'll use unscented stuff in the summer as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And usually by the end of the day, if I've been doing hives all day, my last couple of hives are not happy to see me because I'm sweaty and smelly. I'm like, sorry, ladies.
So. Do you think that the bees know you're you?
No. And I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah. I've had my chickens for years, and I know they know I'm a person mm-hmm. that brings them food, but I don't think they would know me or you.
Yeah.
Depending on who has the food. So
they do think there has been studies where wasps can recognize different faces of people and stuff. Yeah.
That's scary.
I'm a wasp.
You?
Oh, I love wasps. There's a lot of other wasps besides bald faced hornets and yellow jackets and like the cicada killers and the gold digger wasps and all of like the mm-hmm. solitary wasps who are just wonderful. My bees don't. They don't like. They don't know me. They're not my pets. They're
lobster.
Yeah, it's okay. It would be nice. I would love to have power over bees and wasps and stuff. Specifically wasps, because then they can sting repeatedly without dying. Bees die once they sting. So, mm-hmm. But it would be nice. If they did what I told them to.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Little bee voodoo.
Yeah.
Okay, one last question.
Yes.
Root, and I'm asking this because root to seed in our gardening and the things that we do, we use a lot of like Native American ways of doing things, or just old, well used information from years past and antiquity.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I learned, and I believe that it was an Appalachian folklore that said that you should always talk to bees and tell them any upcoming news, to the degree that, for example, if there was a wedding, you would provide them with food and drinks to help that, to allow them to celebrate with you. And if there was a death, you would make sure that they knew about this. And I wonder how you feel about this. And
oh, I talked
to if
mine.
You have.
Yeah. Sorry, go for it.
No,
go
it's
ahead.
Okay. Yeah. You know, yeah. If you have any similar habits.
Yes, I tell the bees. I talk to the bees all the time. I'm going to try to light my plant again. I talk to the bees all the time as I'm inspecting them. I say hello to them in the morning. I always talk to them. And if there is a significant death in my life, I tell them about it. Absolutely. When my father died, who lived here, at least for a long time, I draped my hives in black cloth when he died.
So tell the bees.
I tell the bees.
Well, thank you for sitting with me.
Yeah, no
today.
Problem. It's nice.
Do you want to tell the people how they can find you?
You can find me at www.littlerubybeekeeping.com. I am on Instagram and Facebook, and I think I'm on Twitter, but not so much.
Me either. Thanks, Cindy.
Bye.
I hope you learned something new about bees, and if you were curious about beekeeping, have gained some knowledge about if you should or should not do so. I do hope we answered all of your questions. Next week's episode will be about companion planting, so again, get a pencil and paper ready. Remember to like us on social media, sign up for our newsletter and emails to learn about new products first. Also, if you're liking the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. It really does help us bring you the best content we can. Until next time, be kind to the planet, be kind to each other, and join our community.